Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, what's cracking? Welcome back to the Daily Jungle. The draft is here, and we were all over all things NFL. We had Mike Mayock in to break it down. Also, SB Nation's Paul Flannery came in to talk NBA playoffs and how quickly that Boston-Chicago series turned on Rajon Rondo's injury. And Golden State president and GM Bob Myers had an amazing appearance talking about his team and his coach Steve Kerr. Alvin, lots to get to, so let's get this thing started right now. Let me start with the NFL draft. Let me start with Cleveland. Let's start with the Browns. Let's be very clear about this. And it seems like a really strange thing to say, but it would not be a surprise if the team that is the very worst at the draft wins the draft. I mean, it seems like it would be stunning, but maybe not. On one hand, they have to win the draft. Because when you have four of the top 52 picks and you have 11 in seven rounds, you better win the draft, and you better have a plan. And apparently, they do, to stockpile and load up for this very moment. But then again, this isn't, or isn't this, the last franchise that you want loading up with and hoarding draft picks. After all, what good is having all those draft picks if you're going to end up actually using those draft picks? And nobody is worse with their draft picks than the Browns. It doesn't matter how many GMs, coaches, or owners they cycle through, they will find a way to screw things up on draft day. But then again, we are led to believe that this time it really is going to be different. Because this time, this crew really is different. Sashi Brown, Paul DePodesta going Moneyball. Hugh Jackson is involved this time. No FBI investigation getting in the way of owner Jimmy Haslam. I mean, maybe? Maybe this is the year. Maybe this is where the Browns finally do get nice. Maybe. But remember, the Browns went all in on the NFL draft, and the Browns are absolutely terrible at the NFL draft. Let me give you a phrase that ought to give Browns fans nightmares. Here's your nightmare fuel. Cleveland! You're on the clock.
Cleveland!
You're on the clock! So instead of hoping that this draft is going to be different, what do you say we do this? Instead of putting that kind of pressure on them and saying they have to win the draft, why don't we just recalibrate our expectations? Instead of saying you have to win the draft, why don't we just say don't have the worst draft in league history? And then you can be pleasantly surprised when it doesn't happen. I mean, let's just take one moment and look back at some of the mangled drafts of seasons past and wonder if this year really will be any different. Justin Gilbert instead of Odell Beckham or Aaron Donald. Johnny Manziel instead of Derek Carr. Barkavius Mingo. Trent Richardson. Trent Richardson is running the Bama scout team right now. Take it all the way back to 1999 with Tim Couch. Courtney Brown, William Green, Private Winslow, Brandon Whedon. I mean, over and over and over again.
Over and over.
So Browns fans, let's be real. Let's be real and just go ahead and set that bar appropriately. Set that bar appropriately on the ground. Because that way you can't be disappointed. That way, when the Browns spin off a treasure chest for the right to reach for a first-round quarterback, or they do anything other than take Myles Garrett at the top of round one, you'll all be prepared for it. In the meantime, all you can do is hold your breath and wait and see if anything really has changed. Or if the Browns are the same as they ever were, winning the offseason and using all those draft picks that they've been stockpiling to reload the worst team in the NFL. You better hope like history, or hope like hell, that history does not repeat itself, C-Town. We're all going to find out in a matter of hours. Is it really different this time? Has everything changed, or has nothing changed at all? If they don't take Myles Garrett with that top pick, we're going to know nothing has changed. Even they can't screw that up, right? Even they can't screw that up. Mike Mayock is my guest. Mike, it is so good to have you back. How are you?
Doing great, Tim. How you doing, man?
Mike, I'm doing great. Thanks for making time. I know it's a hugely busy day for you. Mike, before we get into the draft, let me ask you. Your father was the offensive line coach for the University of Pennsylvania. You used to go to Eagles games on Sunday. How does it feel then to be back in Philadelphia with one of the most important days of the year, the NFL draft?
It's pretty cool. You know, we've done it in New York for a bunch of years, then Chicago the last two, and You know, I grew up in West Philly, and I'm very proud of that. With Our Lady of Lourdes grade school in the Overbrook section, and there's a little edge to this town, and people are passionate about their football. The Eagles haven't won a championship since 1960, so there's a little edge in this town, and I think it's going to be loud, it's going to be raucous. And I'm really proud that we're hosting in Philadelphia tonight.
Should be a blast. Now, yesterday you tweeted in part, quote, most cloudy first round I've ever seen, end quote. Lay that out for me. Is it cloudy because of the talent in this draft or the issues that some of the players have or maybe just not having a strong sense of what teams like Cleveland might do with their picks?
It's more, and I've had this conversation with just about every team in the league, and everybody's in agreement that the tenor of this draft is cloudy because first of all, there's more high-level players with medical or character concerns than we've ever seen. And I could go right down the list of guys from Malik Hooker and Corey Davis, Ryan Ramczyk, Reuben Foster. I mean, John Ross, Tack McKinley, all these guys have had recent surgeries. Some of them have been able to work out, some not. We've got all kinds of character concerns, even up to this week. And on top of that, I think most of us believe that once you get to about pick number 10, through pick number 50, there's really similar high-level guys available. And that's why you see so many teams wanting to trade back and not many teams wanting to trade up because it's just a similar kid.
NFL Network analyst Mike Mayock joining us. You know, Mike, you only do one mock draft a year, and you unveiled your 2017 mock draft last night. You've got Cleveland taking Myles Garrett with the first pick overall. If they do go in that direction, what kind of a player would they be getting in Garrett?
He's got the ability to be an all-pro defensive end for as many years as he plays. He's 6'4 and a half, 272 pounds. He ran the 40 and 4.6. I mean, he's got all those measurables we always talk about. If you watch him at week one last year against UCLA, he single-handedly took that team apart. He took the left tackle at UCLA. He's going to be a pick. He's going to be a draft pick this weekend. And he picked him up and moved him from the second round to the sixth round in one day. I mean, the kid dominated the game, but then he hurt his ankle. So there's a lot of criticism about, hey, he didn't look as quick or explosive or as tough, but I think we give the kid the benefit of the doubt and understand as long as he doesn't get hurt and as long as this kid wants to be good, he's going to be dominating in the NFL.
Mike Mayock joins us. The NFL Network provides live coverage of the draft from Philadelphia tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Mike, is there any argument to be made for taking a quarterback like Mitchell Trubisky with the first pick overall?
Look, the way I feel about this is if Cleveland feels like inside their building, everybody's aligned with the fact that they believe that Mitch Trubisky is a franchise quarterback, he's going to play 8 to 10 years minimum, and they're going to win a bunch of friggin' games. If they believe that's the case, then by all means, go get him. But I sit there and go, wait a minute, you guys passed on Carson Wentz a year ago, who was the easiest quarterback evaluation I've had since Andrew Luck. You passed on him, yet you think Mitch Trubisky's the first pick in this draft or the 12th pick in this draft? I don't think it's even close. That's my take on it, and that's not a shot at Trubisky.
All right, so Trubisky, Mike.
I think there's a pressure in the NFL
right,
for teams without, quote, franchise quarterbacks to reach for them, and I think we make more mistakes there than anywhere in evaluating personnel.
All right, so to that point, if you're a team that's rebuilding and you're not going to make the playoffs this year, are you better off taking one of these quarterbacks this year, or is it smarter to wait until next year when you might see guys like Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen, among others?
I think two things. They've got a lot of picks, and I think the best thing they can do is continue to pick quality football players, and this is a draft that's really deep at certain positions. And I think they can get a lot better that way. Now, if they feel like, as I said earlier, there's a quarterback, and I don't care if it's a first-round guy or Josh Dobbs in the third round, but I think you have to keep swinging, okay? And I'm of the ilk that you almost have to take a quarterback every year, or at least every other year, regardless of who you have, because you got to keep swinging. And look at Seattle a couple years ago. They signed Matt Flynn, to a big contract, and they drafted some kid named Russell Wilson in the third round. And Wilson became the guy. So if they believe in a kid, draft him. But at the end of the day, man, you guys got a lot of holes and a lot of places. Go get some good football players.
Clones, give me 1 second. I want to get at you about Stamps.com. Listen, Stamps saves you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. I can mail any letter, any package, using just my computer and printer, and the mailman will pick it up. I can avoid the hassle of the post office and mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. You can create your Stamps account in minutes online with no equipment to lease, and no long-term commitments. Click, print, mail, and you are done. Unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes. Print postage for letters or packages at your convenience, 24/7, 7 days a week. I love how convenient it is. I hate going to the post office. I no longer have to. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, type in Rome. Stamps.com, enter Rome. Stamps.com, never ever go to the post office again. That's Stamps.com. Now, back to the Daily Jungle. We're talking to Mike Mayock for a couple of more minutes. Mike, what about John Lynch? He's in his first draft, is GM of the 49ers. What do you see him doing with the number 2 pick overall, and why?
I wanted to give him Leonard Fournette in my mock draft last night. And the one thing that dissuaded me from that was that his head coach, Kyle Shanahan, comes from Atlanta. They got Tevin Coleman in the third. They got Devontae Freeman in the fourth. So I'm guessing Shanny thinks he can get a mid-round running back like they did in Atlanta. So then I kind of switched my focus to Solomon Thomas, Jonathan Allen, versus a back-end defender like Jamal Adams from LSU. And the more I looked at their defensive backfield, I kind of felt like if they take Jamal Adams, who's one of the safest and most quality players in this draft. And let's face it, your first year in your organization, you want to bang the table, make sure you get a really good, solid pick. And that's what this kid is. You pair him with Eric Reed, the other safety, you've got one of the best safety tandems in the entire league, and then you can leave Jimmy Ward at corner. You don't have to switch him over to free safety. So I have next to no confidence in any of my picks from last night. But that's my reasoning behind Jamal Adams.
I got you. One last thought. Mike, you talked about the number of guys who have already had surgery. You talked about a number of guys with character concerns, which brings me to Alabama linebacker Reuben Foster. He's had his share of off-the-field issues, but you have him going to Buffalo at 10. When you watch his tape, what kind of a player do you see?
I'm a Boston College grad, okay? And I don't say this lightly because Luke Kuechly is a BC guy, and his inside linebacker tape was the best I had seen in years, Luke Kuechly. And when I put Foster's tape in, I was like, wow, this is Luke Kuechly. I mean, this kid, his tape is absolutely outstanding. There's a lot of stuff about him, both medically and character. Every linebacker coach I've talked to said his football IQ is outstanding. So if you connect the dots, the new head coach in Buffalo is Sean McDermott. He was the defensive coordinator for Luke Kuechly in Carolina, and I think he would appreciate that kind of player.
So does that tape make you forget the offseason that he had, or is that something you'd factor in? How concerned are you about the way he's conducted himself since the year ended?
I think you've got to do your homework, and here's what I would tell you. The issue at the combine where he got sent home, to me, was BS. He didn't deserve to get sent home. It was a minor altercation. Nothing happened physically. The kid should have never been asked to leave. That's point number one. The diluted sample is point number two, and that's a little bit of an issue. But I don't think teams are going to hold that against him like they may have 10 or 15 years ago. So every team in the league is doing their homework on this kid off the field, and he had an incredibly difficult upbringing. But at the end of the day, I'm buying into the football IQ and the tape.
Another bad, bad night for the Bulls. A 108-97 loss to Boston. So Chicago's gone from being up 2-0 and headed back home, about to shock the number one seed, to losing 3 straight and now being on the verge of elimination themselves. And it looks even worse than it sounds. And it sounds bad. Especially from my man, Fred Hoiberg. I love the mayor. Love the mayor. But you might recall him getting after Isaiah Thomas after game 4 and shouting out to the refs.
But when you're allowed to discontinue your dribble on every possession, he is impossible to guard. He's impossible to guard when you're able to put your hand underneath the ball and take 2 or 3 steps and put it back down. It's impossible to guard him in those situations.
I get it. I really do. I get it. I see you working, Coach. In fact, I didn't even have a problem with it when he said that. I did not have a problem with him when he said that. That's what coaches do. Just know, though, that if you're going to do that and you're going to call out the opponent's best player and then get worked again in their house, especially if their house is in Boston, then you better be prepared for this after it happens.
Fred, did you see Isaiah carry the ball at all in this game?
No.
Uh-oh! All right, you see what happened there, right? After he called out Isaiah Thomas for carrying the ball and alerting the refs to the fact that Isaiah Thomas carries the ball, they get beat again. And no sooner than he sits down, somebody hits him with that.
Fred, did you see Isaiah carry the ball at all in this game?
No.
And that sound after the question that you heard, that was Fred getting up and leaving the presser. One carrying question, and this guy was gone.
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 Gone. Gone.
So that was part frustration, part annoyance, but give the mayor this. At least he answered the question. At least he didn't next question anyone. And after all, that wasn't really a question as much as it was a total troll job. Are they handing out credentials to Twitter eggs now? I mean, why stop there? Why not walk right up to the podium and slap a printed out crying Jordan on this guy's mug? I'm surprised that somebody there didn't hit him with the old, "Hey coach, this is Seymour Butts from the You're a Loser Gazette." How would you react when a loser says what? And Fred hits him back with, "What? Ah, classic. You got owned, coach. Owned." Hey, listen, the mayor had to know that was coming. The mayor had to know that was coming. I mean, it is Boston, and the Boston media will defend their own, probably even more than Boston's fans will defend their own. So if you're going to call out their best player for carrying, you better make sure you win, especially on that parquet floor, or else you're going to get trolled. And I said the day after he made those comments that I could see the guy working. He was trying to get the league's attention, trying to sway the officials, maybe even psych out IT. You know, essentially, pull a Dave Fizdale. You're not going to rook us.
They're not going to rook us.
Unfortunately, none of it worked. He was unable to pull off any of the above. Thomas was not called for a single carrying violation. And he went out there and he dropped 24 on them in a win. Again,
To
put it lightly, they did get rooked. Up 2-0 to facing elimination. They had the Celtics in a chokehold, but now somehow they're 48 minutes from flatlining themselves. I would say stay off of Twitter, Mayor, but it might not do you any good because the trolls are everywhere. And as much as I do love this guy, you can't just bounce for somebody hitting you with the very thing that you yourself brought up. Tough night. And a short presser. A very short presser. My guest is Bob Myers. Bob, it is so good to have you back. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
Bob, I'm awesome. I'm awesome. Really nice to have you. Good. Thanks for doing this. Hey, Bob, yeah. We're start with the first round. You're coming off that sweep of Portland where you were dealing with a Blazers team that's got a superstar in Damian Lillard, another guy in CJ McCollum who can fill it up, and at the same time, you had to deal with the challenges facing Kevin Durant and Steve Kerr. When you take that, Bob, on the whole, how pleased were you with the way the team showed up in that first round?
Yeah, man, I don't know, Jimmy. Great, obviously, after looking back in the rearview mirror to win four was great. But, you know, Lillard, those guys, I mean, Damian Lillard, funny story, when we were in that draft, we had the 7th pick, and we were working out Damian, and we scheduled a workout for him, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And he came over to the facility, and we said, you know, do you need us to send a car or get you parking? And he said, no, I'm good. So he shows up at the workout. And we said, how'd you get here? And he said, I just walked. He walked from Oakland. No, by the way, you know, come professional athletes. Like, that doesn't happen.
Ever.
So everybody understands. Ever. Like, nobody's walking to any workouts. So he walked over from Oakland. And then you saw right there. Sometimes that's all you need to know about somebody is that. That's it, period. End of story. Like, I don't need to see anything else. You walked over here by yourself. You don't have 7 people with you. You didn't require a limousine to go 4 blocks. So that we have a tremendous respect for that organization. those players, McCollum, obviously, and anybody that watched the series saw how good they are. So to win in four was great. The Kerr stuff, Durant, I mean, that stuff, Jim, there's no – Kevin's a little bit more. You expect injuries. That's common. It's not easy, but it's common. The Steve stuff, there's no handbook. There's no plan. There's no, in this situation you do this. There is no protocol for a head coach that is suffering and needs to take a step back. So that stuff is life stuff that really, that's more than basketball. So that stuff is the stuff that really is emotional. I feel that more than the winning and losing. Just like if your producer or someone in your life that you work with closely is suffering, all of a sudden your show, although you do it, it doesn't carry the same weight because it's not, you know, gives you immediate perspective. So Steve, and what we're going through with Steve, is it's hard to, I don't even know how to go with that one because there's a lot of different things that come up in it beyond that our head coach isn't coaching. So that one is hard. And I'm not trying to, for him, you know, to see a friend, to see somebody go through this is difficult. So
I was going to say, Bob, for you both, obviously, and I can hear it in your voice. Bob Myers, my guest. And Bob, you and I have talked in the past about your relationship with Steve, which from the outside seems to go way beyond the normal relationship of a GM and a head coach. So what has it been like for you to watch him suffer in the way that he has?
You know what it does, Jim? I mean, people probably look at your life and think you've got it. You know, you got your show. You know, you got your family. You know, I'm sure you have enough financially. And they think, you know, he never has any problems. You know, his life's great. But the thing you learn in this situation is everybody's got something they're dealing with or something they've dealt with that is more important than anything. And when you look at a health issue with a friend, a family member, your own, everything else stops. And you realize we all go through things. We do. And if you haven't, you will. Trust me. For people listening, it's coming. And I don't wish it upon anybody, but you live. And as you get older, you realize more that life, it's not, we like to think we can control each day and each week and year. We try, which is all we can do. But when something like this pops up to somebody that is uniquely good, caring, humble person, you know, you step back and you just say, man, you know, it leaves you feeling a little helpless. And for me to know, you know, if you dig a little bit into Steve's life, you know, some would say, yeah, five championships, you know, All-American, won a championship with the Warriors. You look a little deeper, and there's some things he's been through that are personal and that, you know, that are more impactful than all that and more difficult to deal with. So that's how you get to know someone, though. The best people you probably know in your life are people that have been through something with. How do you get to, I mean, to build a relationship like Steve and I have, it took me losing someone in my life, it took him being there and saying, look, I've lost someone too. Going through this with your head coach, having those conversations that you have with someone that is kind of dealing with what he's dealing with, those things, those are so much more meaningful than, hey, how are we going to guard the pick and roll tonight? You know, how do we stop Lillard and McCollum? All of a sudden, that stuff isn't the same weight. And I get it. Steve's competitive. Steve's a relentless worker. You don't accomplish what he has without caring about the sport. We both love basketball. We both care about our jobs and this team, these players. But when you really want to get to know someone, it's not about basketball. It's about life. And so we developed a rapport. And, you know, I think it helps, though. I mean, people would say, what's that got to do with the Warriors? It has everything to do with the Warriors because when our team faces adversity, we lost, you know, obviously everybody knows we lost 3-1 in the finals last year. Some people that would kind of buckle. Sometimes people don't recover. We're moving on, and that's all, 'cause that's all you can do. But because you built a foundation in a relationship, it allows you to keep going. And I think we've cultivated that, and hopefully it'll continue to grow. But right now the focus is not our team. It's really him. The team's going to keep moving. That stuff keeps going. But getting Steve healthy is the focus right now.
Golden State GM Bob Myers, my guest. You know, Bob, I really appreciate your candor. I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts on that. And I knew this already. Before you and I started this conversation, it was very clear that in speaking to both of you, basketball is an important part of your lives, but it's not your lives, and you just reiterated that fact. Is there any thought that Steve might say, look, I need to step away from coaching for a prolonged period of time, maybe even step away for good?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that other people have said, and I understand is a question that people might think of. But when we brought that up, to be honest, the basketball is what provides him with the most happiness. And it's almost like a solve. It's almost what has carried him through, to be honest. And some people might not understand that or think you're just saying that. It's not true. Really, he's been struggling, but the basketball and coaching these players has been a positive. And we've discussed, is it not a positive? We've had that conversation and in meaningful ways and quiet moments. And no, this is in his blood. I mean, it's funny. I don't know how you feel about your job, but we all go through life and hopefully we settle in a career that feels authentic to us. It feels comfortable to us. He's played. He's done the broadcasting. He was a GM. He finally fell into a job that he feels is him. He's like, this is what I'm supposed to do. It took him 50 years of his life. You know, you go through all these things, but when he landed in coaching, he said, this fits me. And I believe that. I think it does. So, you know, and this what he's going through now is not a product of stress. It's not a product of coaching. It's more a physical issue that will be solved. When it will be solved, no one can say, but it is solvable. It's fixable. And like I said, he's going to coach. But right now, he just can't. There's some things that need to be corrected. But I think he'll get back. I'm very, very confident he'll be back coaching. I just can't say when. And when he is, Jim, I think this guy's going to coach for a long time because he thoroughly enjoys it. He really loves the game. And he's a great teacher. And you've had him on. I'm sure you've met him and talked to him. It's one thing to know the game, but he has the ability to communicate it. And our players clearly respond. So I can see why that's a question you'd ask. I totally get it. And other people have asked. But no, I think he's going to be in this game for a long time. We just got to get him back healthy now.
And again, Bob, I really appreciate your thoughts on that. Thanks so much. Yep. Before I let you go, the team won 67 games in the regular season this year. He became the first team in NBA history to win 67 or more in three straight years. And you also ended the regular season with the fourth highest point differential in NBA history. So how would you compare this team to the teams of the past 2 years?
You know, every team's different, Jim, and I know you watch, you know. This team, maybe by having seen the mountain at the top and then having, I think I said this before, summited all but 5 feet of it and then been pushed back down, you learn to trust each other. You learn through adversity or through success to come together, to understand the bigger goal, and then to add a guy like Kevin Durant who's got that hunger, who hasn't been up there to the top, it gives you that different dimension. And so the players that have won, we have guys on our team that haven't won, guys like David West, and JaVale's been a big role for us, Zaza, Durant, a lot of these guys. Our players that have won are now playing to give them that feeling, give the other guys that feeling of accomplishing their goal. So it's different. I mean, I can make it real simple and just say having Kevin Durant makes it different. But sure, it's a different team. I think we all get stronger each year, so I think it's a stronger team, but we'll see. I mean, nobody would predict that we wouldn't have our coach.
Right, so, right.
You just don't know, man. You don't know. And I used to be in the speculation game, but I've seen enough now to know just one game at a time. So we'll see. We'll see how it finishes up.
Bob, last thought. I mean, I could talk to you for an hour, 2 hours. I could talk to you about your big three, your big four. But you mentioned one guy, Bob, and I do appreciate the conversation. You mentioned one guy I've got to ask you about, and that's JaVale. I love JaVale. JaVale McGee made a big impact when he was on the floor in the Portland series. When you signed him before this year, he had 62 games in the previous 4 years. So what kind of expectations did you have for him when you first brought him in?
Oh, man. You know, Jim, we all get I knew what was thought of JaVale. I knew him a little bit, but not well. So, you know, I asked Iguodala, I said, you had him in Denver. What was he like as a teammate? You know, forget about the, he said, and Andre, I don't know if you've ever had Andre on, but
sure,
you'd love Andre.
I do, for sure.
He's fantastic. So he says to me, no, get him. He says, go get him. And I said, well, hang on. You know, that was kind of a quick answer. And he says, no, I'm telling you, he said, he's a great teammate. He said, he's a great teammate, and he said, he will help us. And sometimes, Jim, like that's all you need to hear from someone like Andre. Now, you have to consider the source, but Andre Iguodala is a great source. And he said to me, he said, look, I got it. If there's a problem, I got it. And I said, you got it? And he said, I got it. So, by the way, there's been no problems. And I told JaVale a couple weeks ago, I said, JaVale, you know, and the only time I really sat him down, I said, JaVale, you know what? I said, I just want to tell you, this whole year, you came into camp, you earned your spot. Steve played you a little bit. Then he didn't play you. Then he'd play you 5 minutes. You do well. He'd take you out. Never once did he ever show bad body language. Did he ever complain? Was he ever worried about his own statistics? He was always team first. And I said, JaVale, since you got here, you've been an unbelievable professional. I said, if you ever need me as a reference, then call on me. And that, Jim, that's the legit truth. I mean, whatever he was or whatever people think of him, you ask any player on our team, which is the most important people, they will tell you he's been a model teammate. And in the NBA, when you get minutes one night, not the next night, you play, most people don't respond well to that. They just don't. And he has. So I'm so happy for the guy. I really am. He's been through the highs and lows. And for him to be playing meaningful minutes in the playoffs, I'm just happy for him. It's a great story.
You know, Bob, last thought, I could let you go maybe 5 or 7 minutes ago, but in terms of JaVale, this is how you and I get when we talk, because, of course, the best interviews are not interviews, they are conversations, and this is an awesome conversation. You mentioned JaVale. Maybe one of the biggest challenges of the year was dealing with the heat that he was taking from Shaq. Now, you know the way the world is. You know the way the business is. Mm-hmm. Guys have shows to do. They're going to do what they're going to do, yeah. And athletes need to keep rolling. And JaVale did a really good job with that for a long time. But where is the line, and what was your reaction to hearing what Shaq was saying about him and the way JaVale did handle that?
You know, Jim, like you said, I mean, we all know in a public, you get criticized, I get criticized, we get praised too. So sure. you choose a job where you get that, right? You understand that. You can't respond
to every
criticism. Yeah, I mean, right. So you can't be thin-skinned. But there comes a point where you have to stand up for yourself. And JaVale reached that point, and I think he said, you know what, I need to say something. And he did, and I think that was fine, and we supported that. And the most important thing was his teammates supported them and said, you know what, we get it. You know, he's been ridiculed, and some of it was for things that he should have been or for things that people found entertaining. But to continue to do it while he was playing well and resurrecting his career, I think JaVale said, you know what, I need to say something. And I think he did, and we supported that. And, you know, like I said, it's these guys, he is not a bad person. The things he was doing on the court weren't hurting anybody. And so there comes a time where you say, okay, I get it. That was in the past, and now I'm something else, or I've moved on from that, and I'm trying to be better. And the best thing about a guy like JaVale, Jim, is he does work hard. And, you know, all of us in our early 20s, you want to put a camera on most people, it doesn't look so hot. So I think he's grown up. And so I think his message was kind of like, look, okay, I get it, but look at me now. And that's a fine message to convey back. But again, you know, you in this profession, as a professional athlete, players understand that some things aren't going to be fair. And you have to choose when to respond. I think JaVale finally felt like, you know what, time for me to respond. And what I really loved, Jim, was the teammates. I really loved his teammates sticking up for him. Because that was, I'm sure that went a long way with JaVale. I'm sure it did.
I think you're right. And I'm on the outside looking in, Bob, but we're not talking about maybe somebody taking a run at Steph or somebody taking a run at Draymond or Clay. It was JaVale McGee, who was one of the last ones in, and they all had his back. So it just speaks to the culture and the chemistry of that team. You know, the last thing, Bob, when you said you don't know if I've spoken to Andre Iguodala or not, I certainly have, and the reason for that is you've got this PR staff, Raymond Ritter, Dan Martinez, Brett Winkler, Matt Dinesnera. I've talked to all your guys because they always make them available and accessible, and especially you, Bob. I can't thank you enough for the conversation. I know what you're dealing with right now is very challenging and very emotionally trying, and I really appreciate your thoughts, Bob, very much.
Jim, here's the deal. I ask one. You either got to come to a playoff game, or I'll tell you when we're going to try to go back to San Quentin, either this month or in May or maybe May or early June. You got to come to one of those two things. All right, I'm giving you the option.
I'm on the clock.
One of our playoff games or San Quentin.
Given those two options, and believe me, I don't want to get on the wrong side of anybody in San Quentin. I think I might go to the playoff game, or maybe I won't.
Oh, but man.
You know, Paul Flannery joins us. Celtics beat the Bulls last night. They have a 3-2 series lead. It was not that long ago, Paul, that the Bulls were dominating in the first two games, killing them on the glass. Now they've lost three straight. How would you describe this series so far?
Totally flipped around when two things happened. When Rondo got hurt, which was, you know, think about that. We're talking about Rajon Rondo being a major difference maker in a playoff series in 2017. I didn't think we'd see that. But he was a huge difference in the first two games. He got hurt, and then the Celtics decided to go small, and they ran the Chicago big guys right off the court. They made more shots. And, you know, look, I mean, going small unlocked and changed everything. I wonder where we'd be sitting if Rondo hadn't gotten hurt.
And to your first point, I mean, how is it that that's what this series turned on? I mean, I can't believe that we're talking about what Rajon Rondo means to them and how it impacted this playoff series. So if Boston finishes this and they go on, exactly where do they go from here? I mean, do you have a strong sense of who they are as a team?
I live in Boston. I see them every night, and I still am not quite sure exactly how far they can go. And I think that's, you know, I have a lot of admiration for them. I think they play, you know, they're about the right things. They play the right way. Brad Stevens is a tremendous coach, guys, but I just don't know how far their ceiling is. If you were to tell me they could go to the conference finals and give Cleveland a decent challenge, I'd say sure. If you tell me they lose in the second round, I'd say sure. So beyond winning this first round series, which is an absolute must have, they have got to win this series. I really don't know where they're going to go.
Paul Flannery joining us. He's a senior editor and NBA writer at SB Nation. All right, so jumping around, Paul, what about Cleveland? They wrap up their series on Sunday. What did you see from them in that series? In other words, do you feel like they're rounding into shape, or are they still scuffling along?
Cleveland is fascinating, Jim, because their offense is unbelievable. I don't think anybody in the East can keep up with them and score with them. But their defense is still not risen to where we want it to be, right? Indiana, you know, sure, they tried hard. Paul George is an awesome player. But outside of that game three when they had a 26-point collapse, you never really thought they were going to win these games. So, you know, Cleveland is doing what they're supposed to do, but I still have a lot of questions about that defense. I just don't know if anybody in the East can really test them that far to really give them a challenge before a finals.
But the bottom line is, I mean, last year they were able to score with Golden State, Paul, but they were also able to defend them, and your point's pretty well taken. I mean, does this Cleveland team look like they could defend Golden State in the event that they end up playing them again in the finals?
From where we're sitting in late April, I don't see it. You know, a lot of things can happen, a lot of things can change, ankles can turn, you know all that. But from where I'm sitting right now, Golden State looks just far superior above everybody else. And that said, how many times have we said never bet against LeBron? So, you know, that's really what it comes down to. Do we think LeBron can do this one more time, can pull this team up and raise their level of play one more time, or is Golden State just too much? To me right now, Golden State is too much.
Yeah, I was going to say, Paul, I mean, take a stab at that question yourself. I mean, you look at LeBron, and he certainly can get to that next level. He's got that other gear, but he's got to get through the postseason, get to the finals. When you consider his age, the miles that he has on him, the minutes that he's played in the regular season, and the minutes they're asking him to play right now, is there that other gear that he can still get to, and can he get that team on his back one more time?
You know, Jim, we will never appreciate LeBron in real time. We just won't, you know. Like, someday, 10 years from now, we'll look back and be like, wow, I can't believe he did that again. You know, people say they see signs of slowing down. People say they see signs that he's slipping a little bit, or the energy isn't there, or the minutes are too much, or this, that, or the other. And yet, he keeps doing it. You know, I think he can get this team to play better. I think he can get them to a much, much higher level. I just really hope that one of these teams, whether it's Toronto, whether it's the Celtics, whether it's Washington, one of these teams can just push them into a game where they really need to win.
Paul Flannery joins us. Now, Paul, you described the Clippers-Jazz series as, quote, carnage. You knew coming in it was going to be ugly. It has been. But did you expect it to be like this?
Yeah. I mean, short of Blake getting hurt and Rudy getting hurt, you know, certainly those two things. But, yeah, I thought it was going to be exactly like this. Utah is tough. The Clippers, you know, for all their faults and people get on their case, they've been through this. They played Memphis in those series, you know, 5-6 years ago, same guys. They've been through really tough series before. Yeah, it's about what I expected. I am not liking the Clippers' chances, though, at this point, after losing that game five.
All right, so they've lost Blake before. What do you make of the way they've responded to losing him this time?
You know, I think Chris Paul has been fantastic. I think he's been great. This is the existential question with the Clippers. Can they get by without Blake, and would they be better off without him? Because I just think it's going to be really hard bringing all those guys back again.
What about that? I mean, number one, do you think that he wants to come back, and do you think that they want him back?
Great questions, both. I think if I'm the Clippers, you know, I'll take the latter part first. I think if I'm the Clippers, I don't have any choice, right? They can't rebuild organically. They have to keep this team together as best they can and just hope the basketball gods line up and fall in their way. If I'm Blake, I might be thinking about something else. Chris Paul has every reason to resign. J.J. Redick, from what I understand, likes it there, you know. But Blake, this is a big one for him. Where, you know, is this experience going to define his career, or is he going to go somewhere else and really make a name for himself?
Paul Flannery joins us for a few more moments. Paul, I got to get your thoughts on ISO Joe. I mean, this is an amazing thing to me. How do you explain the transition from ISO Joe Johnson being essentially an insult to ISO Joe being awesome and dominating a series and him turning into a cult hero? How did that happen?
Age, man, age. Right. Age makes everything look better. But, like, yeah, I mean, when he was the focal point of a team that was trying to win a championship, that doesn't work, right? ISO Joe doesn't work. But if your team is trying to get through a really tough series and you need a bucket, ISO Joe is not a bad place to go. And to give that dude credit, man, he's been around so long, and he has not changed one iota. He is exactly the same as when he came into the league. Nothing bothers him. Nothing rattles him. And that's exactly what you want in those situations because, let's face it, you know, that's where your money's won.
Let me ask you about OKC before you go. So if you look at them and you see how their season ended pretty abruptly with a 5-game loss to Houston, game one was a blowout, but every single game after that was close. Houston's obviously the better team, but what do you make of the way the Thunder played, and then where do they go from here?
I think they got to make major changes, and I think they know that. You know, I like a lot of the players they have. I just don't know if I like a lot of the players they have for that team. Those role players were put together mainly in place to support Durant and Westbrook, not one star but two. So I think that they need to make some changes. They're a little bit hamstrung in where their, you know, where their cap is at and all that kind of stuff. But players can be traded. Sam Presti's really good. I would think, assuming that Westbrook wants to commit, which may be a big assumption, that they will look drastically different next year. I think they took this as far as can go. I think Russell took being the one-man Superman pretty much as far as it can go, and that's where it ended.
Paul, one more thing. I think people listening can relate to this. There's a lot of runners out there. I know earlier this month you ran the Boston Marathon. You raised money for the Boston Medical Center. Now, number one, are you a runner? Is this something you normally do, or did you pick this up late and just take a shot at it?
No, I train year-round. That was my second marathon this year, and it was my first Boston, and that was an amazing experience. I can't. If anybody is a runner, and it's overwhelming, that day and the support you get out on the course. And Jim, it was probably the worst race I've ever had. From a time standpoint, but it doesn't really matter.
All right, so when you're running that race and the miles are ticking by, how does that feel? And also, I've heard people talk about this. You think, Paul, that once you get past that 20-mile mark, you're home free. But are you? Like, what's it feel like when you hit mile number 20?
And normally when I hit mile 20, a good friend of mine put it once. He goes, once you get past mile 20, it's between you and your God, you know? And you just got to ask for some salvation there, but Boston's different because Heartbreak Hill, which people have probably heard of, it's actually four hills back to back to back between miles 16 and 21. So by the time you get to the top of that, you're just hoping to just, you know, somehow finish it off. And that's when the crowds really just carry you the last 5 miles, and your brain turns off, and you're just going to do it.
So when you finish, what's the feeling? Is it joy? Is it relief? Is it something else?
All of it, man. All of it. And then it's pain. And then it's, where's the water? Please give me some water. But yeah, it's all those things wrapped into one. And it takes you a long time to even process what you just did. But yeah, it's an amazing experience. One of the best experiences I've ever had.
Jeff is back. Jeff, I'm sure, wants to respond. Let's go there right now. Jeff, what's going on? How are you?
What's up, Rome? You know me, man. Just winning, trimming bushes, out here getting this money with my boy Jay Sharp. You know, smoking my hippie lettuce, but I had to call back, man, because you had a scab say yesterday, how you going to be gone for 7 years to try to come back and do this? And as I think about the ability of a winner like myself, and I see suckers on your show stumble over simulated, subtle, unstimulating scripts, I had to go to another great Warrior winner from the past, and after hearing, "You're blowing it, kid," while getting his eye beat out his head, and then taking a break from being great like myself, 7 years later, he too was going up against someone said to be the best to ever do it. And Sugar Ray got off the couch and pity-patted that head into an early retirement. Reminded me of another Jeff in Middletown coin smack phrase Rome might remember. I'm HIV, bruh, and you Irv. I'll end your career, homie. That's who you're dealing with now, lamb chop. And I'm hungry. I heard y'all dimwits dissing my dirt that produced the winners on the posters in you and your kids' bedrooms. So I thought, let me take a look next door to that porta potty that Mike calls home. And I did my homework. The home of Dan Quayle, Mike Pence, Jim Irsay. Now, what do these men share in common with Mike, you may ask? And that's a good question. They are all the offspring in the genetic breeds of Saints, Saints, and Broncos. Now, y'all clones saying, what's a Saint and a Bronco? Well, a Saint and a Bronco, that's Indiana talk. And it's when your sister is your aunt or your brother is your uncle. So when it seems that Mike is almost savant-like when reading his script, just know that it's those mutant chromosomes skipping and misfiring. Just trust. It takes generation of good Saint and Bronco loving to create a gem like Mike. And the rest of the Indiana honorary Broncos, Jim Irsay, Mike Pence, and Dan Quayle. Imagine that autograph line, Rome. But me, a narcissistic, womanizing, money-hungry winner, I'm more Trump. That's why I bombed you yesterday. We'll call that Syria. And I'm bombing you again today. We can call this Afghanistan, because this that Moab. Because he's the mother of all bombs, Rome. So just know, I wipe my ass in Ohio and I throw the tissue in Indiana. And if you can read a map, I'm right there, bruh. I can take a Gatorade shot and sprint to your dough, partner. Hit me up and shoot a snake out.
Jeff, get out. Get out of the water, Jeff. Shark! Shark! Run for the shore. Swim to the shore. Get out. Get out. Get out. Let's go to Boston. Mark in Boston. What brings you by? Mark, what's going on?
Jim, what's happening, partner?
What's up, partner?
Hey, what's happening, partner? Let me get this straight. Jeff in Middletown, you waited 7 years to make that phone call, and all you did was recycle the same old, tired, weak-ass takes that made you a forgettable caller 7 years ago? Dude, let me just give you a piece of advice from a two-time golden ticket winner, man. If you're going to have something fresh, at least if you're going to let that wine marinate for about 7 years, call with something fresh. Have a take. Don't suck, dude. Back to the shallow end. My yard's not going to mow itself. And just a quick little heads up to the five or six women who are looking for Mike and Indy for child support payment. If you want to get a hold of them, all you have to do is call 1-800-636-8686. That dude will appear faster than Mark in Hollywood responding to a casting couch ad. And just a quick shout out to my boy, Dan in Denver. Hey, buddy, congrats on getting that golden ticket, slugger. Everyone's real proud of you. Only took you 34 calls to get it. Men lie, women lie, stats don't. Next time you hear RTN, stands for Run That Nerd. War Jim Harbaugh, giving a Michigan helmet to the Pope, leaning in and reminding him that Notre Dame went 4-8. People forget that.
Mark in Boston doing what he does. We go to Arlington, Raider Mike. My man, Mike, what's up? How are you?
Man, smack. Props for taking the phone call. But hey, real quick, for those clones who want to know what the night show is all about, just picture 5 hours of that last caller. Wow. Hey, caught your interview with Mike Freeman yesterday. I'm not sure. It was kind of strange. I'm not sure where dude was when he made the call. And, you know, he's normally really, really solid. But he sounded like he was squeezing the grape at some businessman special out at the ballpark. Hey, Mike, let me sum that up for you. The Brownies have some stats geek lawyer, GM, who traded his team out of the Carson Wentz pick last year and is now running around like some Keystone cop looking for a quarterback. He's contacted 27 different teams about moving either up or down. He's looking at a kid with 9 career college starts, and he's about to make Titans GM John Robinson executive of the year. But I digress. Now, Jim, as far as Lynch, hey, look, there is no way in hell that Reggie McKenzie is going to make this deal unless he is ready to step in and assume that lead back role. I know that there's the injury question, and I get the Oakland connection, you know, but the key here on that is not the impact on the fans, but on Marshawn Lynch. You know, they put out a presser yesterday with a video, and seeing him at Raiders headquarters yesterday, he looked like a kid on Christmas morning. And speaking of kids, real quick, when this story broke about a month ago, I got to get this in. Raider fans on Twitter started donating to his foundation in Oakland. You know, I think the kitty got up to like about $2,000 because, hey, you know, very few of us Raider fans have jobs. But now, on the field, Lynch, he'll get all of Murray's work, and he'll get everything that Murray left out there on the bone. You know, people are pointing to 2015, but, you know, that Seattle offensive line, it had a run-blocking grade ranked 29th in the NFL. Lynch averaged 1.1 yards per carry before contact, which is the worst in the league. With Oakland's offensive line, Lynch, he won't have to do his own blocking. And, dude, like I said, 18 months off the sports hernia surgery. Now, Jim, great interview with Mike Mayock. You know, he's been like top five out of all the dart throwers for the last decade. And he has Alabama offensive tackle Cam Robinson going at 24. The Raiders have traditionally liked.
Mike, where are you? Mike, get out of the forums. Mike, get out of the Raider. Run, Mike. Get out of the Raider forums. Mike. Run, Mike.
Can you help?
Mark, Jerry, Jeff. Florence, nice job. Thanks for having my back. Thanks for picking me up. Thanks for checking it out. I appreciate you. Now do what you do. Hit subscribe, tell a friend, and most of all, trust the podcast. Then check back tomorrow for more Daily Jungle. We will see you then. We're out.